Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
Oh, church, when did we lose our way?
Welcome to the Deconstructionist Podcast. I'm your host, John Williamson, and welcome to part two of one of my two Christmas surprises this year, holiday surprises, with our longtime friend of the show, Peter Rollins. And if you caught part one, you already know how incredible this conversation has been. Pete has this unique ability to take ideas we think we understand, flip them inside out, and somehow make them feel both unsettling and strangely comforting at the same time. It's pretty classic, Pete. Today's episode picks up right where we left off, diving even deeper into the ideas that have shaped his work and so many of our listeners over the years. So if part one really stretched you, part two is going to pull those threads even further. We get into identity, community, desire, belief, and what it actually means to be transformed. It's rich, it's challenging, and honestly, it's just really fun. So if you haven't heard part one yet, hit pause and go back. I promise it'll make today's episode even better. But if you're all caught up, then let's jump straight in. Here's part two of my conversation with the brilliant and endlessly fascinating Peter Rollins.
Tell me what made us think.
One of the things I think is so cool about your work, and something that we've tried to do on the podcast as well, is, and I think you've mentioned it in your work as well, as in fact, I think you mentioned it very recently, the fact that although we use sort of the language of Christianity because that's what is familiar to us and sort of how we were raised, we try to extend our work beyond just Christianity. And certainly, you know, this communion as a shared lack can extend obviously beyond Christianity for folks who come from very different beliefs and backgrounds and even a distrust of religion. So talk about how do you cultivate that in a group, you know, when you have people who perhaps don't come from the Christian tradition?
Yeah. And so it's interesting. So for me, you know, I'm in that kind of philosophical stream that sees Christianity not as a belief system, but as a mode of being in the world. So, you know, I get that, you know, Kierkegaard and existentialism, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, and Kierkegaard very famously called Christianity that is belief-based, you know, a belief-based community, that's Christendom. So he calls that Christendom. And I'm not in Christendom, you know, but I am interested in a form of life that, you know, one might call Christian. And at its core, that's the idea of an inherently alienated, conflictual and contradictory dimension to reality. And we participate in that contradiction, you know, and it's an emancipatory experience, you know, in a nutshell, right? And once you go with that idea, yes, this is not involved in any particular religion. There's no particular doctrinal beliefs. As you say, it's not a worldview or anything like that. So these spaces, these communions, to borrow that word, and, you know, there are other words that might be useful as well, but it's funny, it's very hard to find a good word because our notion of social bond is so forged around identity that it is very hard for us, even if we find a word that describes something else, we generally make it into community, you know? So communion is my attempt at the moment to use a word that's so foreign that it causes people to stop. And then I can kind of like, you know, maybe describe what I'm talking about. But yes, this is basically a space for anyone who experiences the trauma of being. And that's it. That's the core. And the idea is you can say anything in the circle, right? There's no rules. You just, everyone goes, like, one of the ways that I do this is you start off like AA, but you say your name and you say that you lack in whatever way you want to say it. I'm divided, I'm contradictory, I'm lacking, whatever. You say it, and then anybody can respond and talk about that experience. And the idea is as you're able to put into words your own lack and listen to other people's, it lightens the load. Just like a musician, when they sing about breaking up with a person, it actually helps you with your breakup. Not because they fix it, but because they symbolize it, right? And they allow you to mourn. So in this experience, you begin to share that. It's like there's no beliefs for or against, except for the sense of saying in your own words what it means to be a creature of desire, of lack, and how that looks for you. And the role of the facilitator is simply to name what's happening. So for example, if someone's talking too much, instead of telling them not to, because that's interesting, why does somebody feel that they need to talk? That's an interesting thing that could lead to some interesting insight. But the facilitator might name it. I've noticed that, you know, one or two people are talking more and other people aren't saying anything. How does the group feel about that? So the role of the facilitator isn't to make judgments morally, but to try to symbolize what's going on in the group to allow this conversation to happen so that forgiveness is felt. Because here's the thing, you can't preach forgiveness, right? This is the idea in churches, you know, talk about, oh, we should be forgiving or whatever, right? That's interesting, and I've got nothing against that. But if you make forgiveness into some ideal, then you can start to feel guilty because you're not forgiving, right? And then you become the hero. Then you have the A to B. So even you go like, you should be loving, then of course you go, well, I'm not loving enough, and you feel guilty, right? The idea is how do you create a space where one just experiences forgiveness and experiences forgiving? It's like it's a letting go that you don't work up, but rather being in that space, it happens. And so these are the creation of spaces where people can experience forgiveness, can experience grace without being told that they have to. But I don't know if that makes sense or not. But.
No, that's absolutely beautiful. And that actually kind of goes into the next question I have, which is, if community is less about shared belief, what holds it together? And what are the boundaries, if there are any? And are there things you can believe a communion cannot ignore or accept?
Yeah, brilliant. So in kind of Lacanian psychoanalysis, you have two things that happen very early on. The first is called alienation. The second is separation. So alienation is what I described earlier. In a way, you feel yourself separate from the mother other, and you want to get back, right? The first thing you want to do is get back to it. Now, if this failure doesn't happen, that's where psychosis arises. There's a failure in separation, right? Perversion happens if separation occurs, but alienation doesn't. Sorry, apologies, I get the terms right. Alienation is first, right? So psychosis is if alienation doesn't fully take root. That's what psychosis is at a structural level. Perversion is what happens when alienation occurs, but separation There's a problem with separation. Neurosis is when both happen, right? So alienation is when you feel that you are apart from the other and you want to get back, right? Separation is, you could describe it as this, is when you realize that you're not just separate from your mother, but your mother is separate from herself. And what that means is your mother is an alienated subject with various desires and interests outside of you, right? So, and you know, and if the child can't symbolize enjoyment outside of the mother, I say perversion is part of what happens, but the child has to begin to be able to symbolize the other things that the mother enjoys. Traditionally, this is called the name of the father, which is basically just a name for whatever else in the mother's world, whether it's work or friends or whatever, that takes their interest. Now, the point here is that separation opens up a type of freedom, because you realize that what joins you to the other is that you're both alienated, right? Where you both join together is precisely in your alienation. And that's a social bond. So in the same way I would say in Christianity, the argument is we're trying to be like God. So here's the joke of Christianity. Zizek talks about this, right? What is the joke of Christianity? And the joke as in the kind of counterintuitive logic. Well, the joke of Christianity is that somebody goes into church and says, I want to be one with you, but I am alienated and isolated and I feel alone. I'm full of doubt. And then God says, "Ah, my child, you're one with me," right? So that's the answer. The answer is not, you will overcome those things, but rather I am joined with you in those very experiences. So that's the social solidarity. That's the social connection with the communion of believers is that you are joined together not by some positive identity that you share, but by the fact that you are all alienated.
That's funny. What you're saying reminds me of one of the parables that you tell in Pints and Parables, the one of the woman who loses a child. Just what she finds, the gift she's given at the end, it just makes me think of that immediately, in the sense that there's this shared experience amongst them, even though they may come from very different places and have very different beliefs, but there's this shared loss that they all have that sort of unites them.
We made that into a short film. It's a beautiful Buddhist parable, and I can share the link with you, and you can, if you want, share the link with your listeners, and they can watch the very story that you're talking about. I say we made a little cinematic, beautiful version of it that captures that. And actually, some of the parables that I would tell really do dig into this idea. There's a few of my favorite parables all touch on this notion of a redoubled alienation.
Yeah, that story still sticks with me years later. It was just absolutely a beautiful parable. And I would absolutely love to share that one. So for those who are sort of existing groups who have a community in the conventional sense, whether it be shared doctrine, identity, and so on, what are the practices or ruptures needed to move closer towards communion as you describe it?
Yeah, so I kind of always want to say, which I've said already here, but want to kind of repeat, because sometimes people will legitimately come back to me and go like, oh, so community's bad. And I want to go, no, like community is part of like the nature of reality. And there's a C.S. Lewis talked about two types of friends. The first type of friend is the person you meet and you share so much in common. You meet them and maybe at a party and you have the same taste in music, you have the same political ideas, and it's great, and it's a real connection. Right? And then he says, and the second type of friendship is that best friend who you seem to disagree on everything. And he says, and that's that friendship, I think he says, that's even better, right? And that's the friendship based on otherness, where you literally enjoy the fact that the other is other and different from you, not the same, and how that challenges you and how that makes you other. Because the biggest that the other has for us is to expose how we are other to ourselves. One of the reasons why we often don't like to encounter people who are other is because we take it that our views are natural, like almost like as natural as a tree growing in a forest. And when we see ourselves through another person's eyes, we can start to maybe go, oh, the way I look at the world is bizarre. I thought you were monstrous and strange, but now I see me through your eyes and I'm wondering if I'm monstrous and strange, right? So to defend ourselves from our own monstrosity, we try to hide ourselves from the other, right? And protect ourselves in community. So that makes a lot of sense, and that's what we do. What I would say in terms of your question is it possible to create spaces where one genuinely encounters difference? And I mentioned it earlier, but it's very, very important. I mean, I grew up in Northern Ireland during the Troubles, and this is very key in any conflict, but it's not just about disagreement. It's not that one person thinks that we should be nice to the homeless and another person thinks we should be nasty to the homeless, right? That's a disagreement that is reasonably easy to overcome, or at least see who's right. The problem is you disagree about the very way that you disagree. So it's both are wanting to be nice to the homeless, but they might, because they disagree with the very framing of the question, they come to two very different answers. So it's not just about disagreement, it's about disagreeing about the disagreement. And so the question is it possible to create spaces where you're decentered by the other? Now, this is what I mean by decentering practices, by the way. So centering practices, we all know about, and they are about peace and centering. Decentering practices are designed to help you see yourself through the eyes of the other and to decenter you, but not so that you despair, but so that something emancipatory can happen, so that potentially something can open up in you that you hadn't seen before. So for example, we have a thing called there's the Last Supper, where 12 of us will meet in an upper room and we'll invite a guest who is very different from the people in the room, really different. And over the starter, they talk. Over the main course, they do Q&A. And at the end, a wider discussion over dessert. And then if we don't like what they say, it's their Last Supper. Hence, it's called the Last Supper, right? And it's a little play on a few things. One, there's a movie called The Last Supper, came out with Cameron Diaz many decades ago. But also it's the idea of saying to the person who comes, we're putting you in the seat of Christ. I'm like a Christ in the Last Supper, and you know what we did to him, so you better be careful, right? But it's The idea is you do one Last Supper, not much happens. It's just a nice meal. But if you do 12 of those in a year, you begin to see yourself through the eyes of another. And it's not about being convinced by their argument. It's about beginning to see yourself through their eyes and maybe seeing something in you that can be transformed. So, for example, we have another group called the Evangelism Project, where we go to be evangelized by other groups. Now, the evangelism isn't where we go to, say, the Islamic Society, and we learn about what they do. But the evangelism isn't that we're going, hey, we're here to maybe become Muslim, right? Because that would be disingenuous. Nobody's going to become Muslim, right? It might happen, but it's not what we're there for. It's called the Evangelism Project because at a certain point we say to the other, tell us what we look like to you, because I need your eyes in order to see myself. You're the instrument of my conversion. I want you to evangelize me by decentering me, by helping me see things, externalities, things that I don't see within myself. Your eyes are vital for that. So those are decentering practices. And I would encourage groups to go, can we do some sort of decentering practices? They help stop community from reifying so much. By the way, communion is, I should mention this, communion is fundamentally, it's very close to the existentialists, because in community, it's all about the inside. And progressives try to make community universal. So a progressive will say, we want everybody at the table, right? We want everybody invited in, everybody inside, right? But the problem with that is the more you try to include everybody, the more exclusionary it becomes. So for example, when you try to create the most inclusive language you can, so you talk about, you don't talk about mothers, you talk about birthing people, right? And you don't talk about breastfeeding, you talk about chest feeders or whatever, right? You're doing that because you want to create the most inclusive language, right? And of course, but we know what happens when it becomes really inclusive, it feels like it becomes really combative and it really creates a distinction. As soon as the desire to say, listen, we're talking about birthing persons, right? But that comes from a legitimate place. A progressive thing is, can I have a language where there's no outside, right? But when you get to the language of no outside, you create an absolute outsider. And not only an absolute outsider, they become anathema. So hell is, it's like, you know, that idea, like nobody goes to hell. You go, oh, people, what you believe that people go to hell? Yeah, but if you go to hell, you're not a person, right? So hell is like, that's where you go when you're, because you're so horrific, you're so awful, right? So you're totally anathema. It's not just we disagree, right? Christianity's conservative element. Christianity's always been a universalist religion. There's three ways to describe it, but the conservative way is it's for everybody, right? There's particularistic religions, which is this for some people, it's not for everybody. So like Judaism, Hinduism, Islam, they all have a place for people who aren't in their religion. And Christianity, it's universal. No, this is for everybody. And so but because it's for everybody, if you don't accept it, you're nobody. You're a complete outsider, right? So that's the inside. And if you ever see a community that says, we welcome everybody, you can always ask, who are the people here? I have a friend who's very, you know, I used to live in LA, very woo-woo place. And, you know, a friend was trying to set up a hippie festival and he was like, everybody's welcome. And so I just sat down and I told him like 3 or 4 groups that I knew wouldn't be welcome. So like, I'm going like, don't lie. Why are you lying? Why are you saying everyone's welcome? I know loads of groups that if they showed up and said, can we set up a stall? You would be like, no. But that's the ideal of progressivism, you know, a community where there's no outsider. And I would say philosophically that's impossible. I recommend Todd McGowan's book, Embracing Alienation, as an argument for why that's not possible. But communion is a space in which we're all outsiders, which is the existential idea. So Jean-Paul Sartre says, no matter how in you are, you can never be fully in the world. There's always a part of you that doesn't fit. And the more you try to fit, say with the cool people at school or whatever, there's a part of you that feels like an imposter. Because to be human, there's always an element of you that is on the outside. So for me, the Pauline universal is that we are all the trash of the world, right? The trash is what you put on the outside. We are the shit of the world is one of the literal translations, right? Which is, and the shit is literally what is not included. It's what's excluded. And so the communion is a social bond forged around the dimension in which we acknowledge that we're all outsiders. Now, you also mentioned, what are the limits? Do you want to talk, or do you want to come back in any of that before we get onto that? Or?
No, you just made me think of a quote by the famous Ben Folds. There's always someone cooler than you.
That's it. I mean, yeah, and it, like in the movie, one of my favorite movie types, you know, we all love the genre, the coming of age genre, where, you know, it's in set in school and all the cool people, like one of the best movies ever is like Heathers, where all the cool people are called Heather. But the whole thing about a good movie that's set at that time, and Todd McGowan's new book, actually, A Cambridge Companion to Lacan, talks about this, but is that you kind of notice that even the people who are the cool insiders, they're all insecure as well. There's a certain sense in which we're all trying to be in and we're all pretending, but it's a pretense. And often the people who pretend most of all are the ones who hate themselves the most and feel most alienated and on the outside. And ironically, it's the outsider, the one who just, you know, accepts their outsiderness, who seems genuinely cool, right? The most interesting person. The outsider, I think, is always the interesting one because they don't try to overcome their alienation. They embrace their alienation and they enjoy their alienation because that's where all the meat is. Anyway, oh yeah, but the limits, this came up actually in a meeting I had last night because we were talking about how to set these groups up and what are the limits? And I think it's a very good question. I don't want there to be too many. Except within legal limits. For me, communion can happen anywhere. I saw communion. I've only ever been in a prison once. I was very generously, some people I know who do prison work brought me in and we sat down with people who are lifers in prison. And it's a long time ago now, but they had a type of communion where they were being honest about the things that they had done and that were had been done to them. And that was a space where if that was happening outside of a prison, you would have to report it, right? But in a prison, it's completely acceptable, right? It's a bit that creative. And one person said to me in that circle, they said, you know, here it's like you either confess your monstrosity or you become the monster or you stay the monster. And I thought that was very beautifully said. But outside of that prison work, like I did a group like this recently and there was a person there who was a sovereign citizen. Do you know what sovereign citizens are at all? I'm going to revolutionize your life. It's a very small thing, but now I've said it, your algorithm is going to feed you sovereign citizen stuff for the next 10 years. It's basically people who, for a variety of reasons, don't believe that they are under the jurisdiction of the legal system, at least in some areas. So for example, they often don't have driver's licenses, car insurance. They believe they are allowed to travel without these things. And they have these rules, they have these things to say to police officers, whatever. But sovereign citizens often, you know, it's a form of psychosis. Like a lot of neurotics are sovereign citizens, but it's a psychotic thing. It's like you literally don't feel yourself woven into ideology. So, you know, the psychotic is a person who doesn't see a police officer, they just see a person. The neurotic sees a police officer, they see an embodiment of the law and they get nervous. A psychotic doesn't see a teacher, they see a person, right? So psychotics don't get woven into the big other, psychoanalytically speaking. And so why was I talking about that? Oh, yes, why I had a sovereign citizen at one of the groups. That's totally fine. Brilliant. And everything like that's acceptable. What the limit has to be is just a legal limit, is if someone shares something that is a danger to themselves or to others. And maybe that has to be said up front of people going like, listen, you know, that's a kind of legal limit. But in terms of then sharing everything, even the craziest of things aren't really crazy as long as, and sometimes it might collapse. Groups can collapse, but you almost have to have faith that groups can cope with a lot of madness and have faith in the group that it can hold together, because there'll always be a few people who are struggling with maybe a psychotic break or something like that, right? Always, or hyper anxiety or whatever it is. Can you have a faith that the group can hold, and maybe sometimes it won't. So in terms of limits, I think the limits for me are primarily legal limits, and that's pretty much it. But I could come back to you in a year, sweating with no hair, going, forget that, we tried it, it was too much. I have a whole list of limits.
We'll see. Yes.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
TBD. This notion of community, though, does feel very timely in the sense that at no point in my adult life, you know, I just turned 46 over the summer, can I remember a time where, at least in the United States, and I think this is sort of cascading more broadly than just the U.S. even. Do I remember a time where we have been more divided? I think a good indicator of that is just this last week has been filled with absolute insanity with the death, the shootings all over the place. We had multiple school shootings here on top of this very famous personality, Charlie Kirk. And then just, I try not to engage online, but I've been watching it and just seeing the dialogue happening just kind of shows that there's still like this deep, deep division that could in part be solutioned through something like, you know, communion.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that at all times, community, I think, threatens the stabilization and the stability of civilization. You know, in one sense, I want to put that out there. It's like there's no, we're always a danger, but I absolutely agree that we are, I grew up during the Troubles and I'm sitting here going, I don't think I've ever seen as divided a world. And as I say, saying something whenever the first 30 years of my life was literally a conflict of division, but I'm like, whoa, it's crazy at the moment. I see a real erosion of the commons, which is generally a sign of the collapse of civilization. Finally, COVID really helped with that, right? So the problem with COVID is, one of the many problems, but is that whenever we were isolated from each other, we were literally not rubbing shoulders with people who are other than different. And we were able to be in hermetically sealed little bubbles where we were either seeing people who agreed with us and or the worst version of the people who disagreed with us. So what the algorithm did is that you weren't getting the best version of people who disagreed with you. You were getting the worst version. So everybody's owning the other, right? Everyone's like, you know, watching these videos in which they destroy the X and Y and Z, you know? And I didn't notice over COVID more and more, even family dinners and stuff, where again, that was sometimes like a commons, where you would be having food with a relative, a cousin who completely was different from you. People began even to pull away from that. So there is, and there also, of course, with the increase of like the private spaces, you know, you have things that look like a commons, like a Soho House or something like that, but it looks like it has even a communion sometimes it can look like, but it has a very high bar of how to get in. You know, you actually have to spend a lot of money, you have to be rich, you have to be recommended by somebody. So it looks like a commons where, oh, you can meet anybody at Soho House and whatever, but not really. They're curating who can go in and who can go out. So with the erosion of the commons and with the lack of communion, yeah, I think we're in a very dangerous place. And I think the vocation of people who are interested in this work of Christianity, not Christendom, but Christianity, is going like, oh, is it possible to set up communions in the cities that we live in, the towns, the villages that we live in, where you genuinely not just rub shoulders with otherness, which is good, but also where you create a social bond forged out of that otherness. And that's the key.
I love that. So as I realize we're running short on time, so I'll skip to my last question here, which is, I think what's fascinating about some of the recent work that you've done is you're sort of reflecting back on sort of where your work started and how it's sort of evolved over the years. How do you see it continuing to evolve over the next, say, 5 to 10 years?
Thank you for that. Yeah. So my work, you know, I started this work kind of partly at 17 when I would start it, and I just dedicated myself to it from there. I think it's entered into its kind of more mature form in the last decade. You know, I'm 52 now. The last 10 years has been that. The third element that I've added, basically, there's been three elements that I have added over time. So the first is the transformist art liturgy, then the decentering practices, and most recently, communion. These are the three pillars to what I'm attempting to do. So I'm going to spend a good bit of time in the next couple of years refining the communion idea, helping other people to set up these spaces in their own, in their place, in their own where they live. And then my desire, because this is the difference, I'm not an academic, so I did my PhD and all of that, but I never did it to be part of the academy. I've never taught a day in my life. I did one small course once. I taught back in the day to some teachers. That was it. So because I just never wanted to be in the academy, but I hang out with the academics and I read academic stuff. But my interest has always been in technology, developing an immersive space in which we can experience a transformation in our way of being in the world, our way of engaging with one another and engaging with the world. Part of that, of course, I've been very interested in the academic, and I teach every week, and on my Patreon, all of that. I do all of that. But my main interest is in this developing, unfolding this technology, the decentering practices, the liturgy and communion. And so in answer to your question, partly it's going to be unpacking communion a little bit more and also starting to actually help create those spaces in physical locations.
And one of the interesting things I just want to point out to you that you made a great point in sort of your debate per se against yourself using ChatGPT. One of the, because I'm fascinated by ChatGPT and use it for a lot of things at work as well. But one of the things that you point out that it does not do a very good job at is being critical. It tends to agree with you. And so it'll be interesting to see if they evolve it to the point where it can, you know, critique your work even and sort of kind of push back. Is that something you continue, you know, you plan on continuing to sort of dive into?
Yeah, no, I'm very interested in it as well. And I use it sometimes to engage critically and tell it, you know, have to force it to be critical. And I'm always interested in the limits of AI. And also, of course, as soon as you find a limit, then people try to overcome that limit. One of the interesting things at the moment, so I do psychoanalysis and I'm in psychoanalysis and in proper psychoanalysis, like say, for example, Lacanian psychoanalysis, one thing that ChatGPT is really bad at is not answering. But when you're doing proper psychoanalysis, you can beg the analyst to say something to answer your question. What does my dream mean? And they say nothing. And it forces you to do this work. It's kind of like so frustrating. There's certain things that chat's not very good at. And one of them is to say, not saying anything. It always answers a question. So there's certain limits that it has. And if you could list a few more. I definitely find it, I think it's the technology that early days, fascinating. And I'm interested in, I mean, it is, here's an interesting thing about continental philosophy. This is an aside, people might want to check out on this, but continental philosophy, there's some thinkers who are particularly difficult, right? Lacan being one of them, famously, Hegel famously, right? But part of it is because by definition, the work is hard, by definition, and they're trying to kind of break you out of these completely commonsensical ways of thinking that we just had since you were a kid. And partly to do that, it's like climbing Mount Everest. If you can get in a little one of those zip lines or whatever, and it'll just take you up to Mount Everest, you've climbed Mount Everest, you're at the top of Mount Everest, but do you feel the same? And have you experienced climbing in the same way as the person who trained and did all that? There is a funny thing about chat that I'm worried about the next generation, because at least, you know, we've maybe done the hard work, right? But when you're starting with chat, it simplifies things so much that I think it takes away from the hard work of climbing. Someone who listened to that debate said, I thought this is very good. I think it's a comment on it. They said, Pete, it sounded like you were talking to someone who was a really enthusiastic person who loves your work, who's just a bit dumb. I was like,
It's funny that you say that, because I took a bunch of large language model courses through my day job. And one of the courses that I really enjoyed was presented through LinkedIn, through some LinkedIn learnings, and presented by this Scottish gentleman named Dave Burse. And so the way he describes it, I thought was perfect, because I thought the same thing, too. I thought, at least with the limitations it currently has, it feels like a shortcut to a lot of things. And so he sort of reframed it for me in the sense that you can't lean on it, but you can use it to help enhance the things you're already doing. And I thought,
yes,
as sort of a personal assistant. So I try to make sure I use it as such and not lean on it too much to the point where it's really doing the work I should be doing for me. Because again, there's also the problem with hallucinations too. It gets a lot of things wrong. And so,
yeah. No, that's a beautiful way to frame it. I love that way of framing it. It's like, so ironically, you almost need to already know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And then it can really enhance. If you don't know what you're talking about, yes, the problem is if it hallucinates, you don't know. Like I've talked to him because of my Irish accent, I say a name like Le Planche or something like that, and it completely mishears it. Yeah. So it makes up somebody up, and then it makes up all of this information about them. And then I'm going like, hold on, I know my philosophy of psychoanalysis. I don't know that name. I could just not know that name, but is that just made up? And I go like, yes, it's made up. But if I didn't know enough, I wouldn't know that ChatGPT just made it all of that up.
What a weird function though, right? Like the fact that it will literally fill in the blanks with such great detail. I mean, that is a concern, because I mean, there are, to your point, there are probably a lot of college kids out there who are leveraging it to the extreme that it's literally writing their papers for them, but at the risk of having a whole bunch of nonsense contained within. And so you really, you know, you can use it to do things like, you know, it really should be more you write the paper and ChatGPT is more so there to check for grammar mistakes and spelling mistakes and make sure that it's tight. But yeah, at this point,
I have a theory that like students get AI, you know, to write the essay, lecturers get AI to read it, and then the student and the lecturer can go off and have a good conversation at the pub, right? So that's kind of like my vision of how it should work, which is not dissimilar from Zizek, where he talked about these sex toys. You know, there's a male sex toy, female sex toy, and they can have sex for you. You just put them together. They're having sex while you can go off and chat about something interesting. So I think AI will do that. Is like, let them write the essays and let them read the essays and we can do philosophy.
I love that. I love that. It's a weird age we live in, but it's fascinating. Technology for me as well is just a fascinating thing. And to see things develop in such a quick pace, you know, I think I was reading something not too long ago that talked about, you know, the advancement of technology and how it's just continued to speed up because technology builds upon itself. And so the rapid advancement of technology has just been fascinating to see since, you know, since our childhood. You know, I remember I had a psychology professor who went to a technology convention. He came back and he said, and this was probably 1996, somewhere in there, he said, you know, I've seen some things that you guys will see within your lifetimes. And a couple of things that he mentioned were self-checkouts at the grocery store, which felt like Star Trek technology at that time. We're like, what? No. And a couple other things. But he said, almost like he was predicting the future, he said, I believe that within our lifetimes, we will see technology that consolidates, meaning I believe that your watch, your computer, your phone, everything will eventually be condensed into one piece of technology. And he basically predicted the Apple Watch, you know, and I thought there's no conceivable way we'll see that because, you know, look how long it took us to develop automobiles.
Yeah. It took a long time for fire, and it took a long time between fire and the printing press between the printing press and the radio. And now we're seeing changes like rapid, like crazy.
It's unbelievable. Before I let you go. I know the Patreon is a great place to support your work and to also stay engaged with community. I've been really enjoying, you know, the questions that people have brought forward and some of the things you've done there. What are the best ways to stay on top of what you're up to right now?
Yeah, I guess the best place, I think, is probably YouTube. I mean, I've got a YouTube channel, for lots of free stuff there. You can, lots of things to listen to. Oh, I would maybe say this as well, podcasts, like things like this. I think the best way, if people find any of this interesting, podcast interviews that I've done in recent years, I think that's sometimes the best way to come out because it's conversational, it's less lecture types. And I also I haven't done my podcast for ages, but there's old episodes of my podcast, The Fundamentalist with Elliot Morgan. So yeah, between podcasts and YouTube, that's a good, and Instagram, those are the places to kind of maybe dip your toe a little bit deeper in these ideas. Yes, and I would welcome you all to participate and be part of the conversation.
Thank you so much, Pete. This is, as always, fantastic. And we won't wait so long next time to have you back on again. Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
John was young and driven with a heart of gold. Finished seminary, married, found a church he could go home. Made a living, giving dying folks a shoulder and a hand. Until he told his leaders that he had some feelings for another man. And they said, John, you must go and take your broken heart and walk it to the door. We know you're hurting and you've been giving, but now your damaged goods and you gotta give some more. John, we love you, but we can't love you. You must go. Thank you.
Jen could sing a song and channel the divine. Spent a decade sharing it and kept herself in line until her eyes began to see the light inside the dark. Then the floor of all she thought began to fall apart. And they said, Jen, you must go.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.